We'll call the House Tax Committee to order. We'll just check on a quorum and make sure we've got a quorum here. So today's bill, I'll be moving House File 4. We're going to be working through amendments. We've already had the testimony, so today we will have amendments and member questions. And thank you, members, for allowing us to get through as much ground as we did yesterday. But we'll certainly open it up for questions at this point. We don't quite have a quorum yet, so when we do have a quorum, I'll move House File 4. So, but we will start working on the amendments right now. So we will have House File 4 before shortly, but let's just pretend we do. Okay, why don't we do that until we have a quorum? Why don't we see what questions the members have up to this point, and then we'll also, of course, fully discuss amendments that are before. So questions for members right now, or would we wish to proceed to get into the amendments here? Okay, let's actually get into the amendments. We're pretty close here. But when we have a quorum, I'll move House File 4. The amendments that you have, and there's... Okay. So we do have a quorum, so I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Thank you, members. So I'll move House File 4, and the motion would be to go to Ways and Means. The first, are these in any particular order here? Where's that one? Oh, yeah, we should probably move the delete everything amendment, members, which is this. The A17-0274, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have House File 4 as amended before us. Let's go up with the Kosnick Amendment first, I believe, which is the Representative Kosnick was the 800489 amendment. The two-year amendment, Representative Kosnick.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment requires if the CTIB, current or former CTIB counties choose to impose or exercise the option to increase their local sales tax for the county above the first quarter percent to have a referendum of the voters, or if subsequently choose to raise the sales tax for a transit project that requires an ongoing subsidy, the voters would have a referendum notice and to understand that it's an ongoing operation.
Okay, thank you. Questions for members? Lee Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I'm not familiar with the transportation area, so Representative Kosnick, if you could tell me what is the change to current law and kind of go what's current law and what you're doing with this amendment. I'm not on transportation, Mr. Chair, just to understand.
Perhaps Ms. Dalton would be best to give the most accurate information. I can give you my synopsis, but probably should go for accuracy.
A9. Members, we're on the A9 amendment. Should be in your packet. Is there anyone who doesn't have one?
I don't have one.
Okay, members, I'm going to back up here just a second. Representative Schultz moves the minutes of March 23rd, 2017. Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Kosnick.
Could we confirm if it's the A16? Amendment?
I believe it's A9. Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick, if you want the last version that I gave you, it would be the A16.
Okay.
The A16.
Yeah.
Yes, okay, that's the one I'm looking at. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
So should we discard A9, Representative Kosnick? Was that yours also?
Yeah. Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. We'll discard that amendment. Okay, so we will now take a more current motion here. Representative Kosnick moves the H0004A16 okay. Amendment. Ms. Dalton, can you please explain what we're doing here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, currently there are two local sales taxes for transportation. One is a quarter cent for the CTIP counties. One is the half cent for any county that has not a member of CTIP. Originally, That second one required a voter approval before it could be imposed, and a couple of years ago that was changed to that they could just pass it by ordinance. What this bill is doing is it's saying that if a county leaves CTIB and is now going to impose it under the second tax, it can impose a quarter cent under that second authority without going to voters. But if it wants to impose the half cent, it must go to the voters to get the approval to go from the quarter cent to the half cent. In addition, it requires that if there is a new use authorized in the future that will incur ongoing operating subsidies of at least $10 million a year, they would have to go to the voters again to get that approval for that use. And Mr. Chair, the other part of this amendment is there is right now a limit on how much regional rail authorities can spend for light rail transit and commuter rail for counties that are subject to CTIB, and that just extends it also to that. Even if they leave the CTIB group, they still have that limitation on what they can use the regional rail authority levies for.
Steve Mark,
Chair. Thank you very much, Ms. Dalton. So the CTIB counties, are those the seven metro ones outside Hennepin and Ramsey? Which ones are those exactly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, it's all the metro counties, including Hennepin and Ramsey.
Okay.
Or Ms. Dalton?
Maybe I misunderstood the question.
Mr. Chair, originally any of the seven counties could have become CTIB counties. Five of them became CTIB counties. I believe it's Scott and Carver did not.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's Scott that actually has already imposed the half cent under the other law.
Thank you, Mark. Chair, no, thank you. Questions? Representative Loeffler and then Carlson. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I understand it, all the other counties have been under current law allowed to go to the half cent without any of these provisions. Is that correct?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, the original law required everybody to go to the voters if they wanted to impose this tax. A number of the counties, I believe about 7 or 10 of the 23 originally did get votes before they imposed it. And then a couple of years after this authority was granted, they removed the voter approval requirement. So the rest of the counties did not get voter approval.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you.
Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was going to ask if there's anybody here that could comment. I know you're not open to testimony this morning, but I'd like to know if this were to be implemented, a negative impact on the remaining CTEP counties.
Well, Mr.
I'm asking that as a legislator from Hennepin.
And Chair Carlson, I think what we'll do is we'll see if the department has comments. That might give us a bit of guidance as to where this may be going. Mr. Cummings? If you know what I mean.
Is there some debate about this?
Right.
Please state your name. Who represents the record, please, sir?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the tax policy manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Any comments on the Kosnick Amendment from the department's viewpoint?
Well, Mr. Chair, so I've just looked at this amendment, and so I don't have any thorough analysis of the impact of it. I don't know if this would impact all seven counties or the five counties, I believe, that impose the CTIB quarter cent, I believe, right now. I also don't know if this requires that there must be voter approval for all counties in the state that impose a transit tax or just those counties in the metro area. So I'm not sure if the voter authorization would be needed for the 82 counties across the state that are authorized to impose this under current law. but don't right now.
I'm putting you in kind of an unfair situation here, and I apologize for that, Mr. Cummings. This is the new amendment here, and is there anyone? I'm going to be very limited on testimony from the public, very limited, heavy on questions for members, but is there anyone that would like to say a very few comments on this amendment in the audience? Okay, let's go back then to Chair Carl.
Mr. Chairman, your last comment, I feel that some of us that would be expected to vote on this are in an unfair position because we don't really know what the impact is. I know from the press there's been some debate about some of the counties and the distribution of the money among the five, and I don't know what degree this may or may not impact on that that debate. It may be good to move in this direction. It may be bad. I mean, I think a lot of us just don't know.
Right. And Chair Carlson, just so you know, my mother never said life would be fair. And to that point, we're going to have a bunch of amendments, I think, from both sides that we haven't seen before. So we're going to do the best we can to make judgments on this. And, of course, as you know, this is not certainly not the final vote on any of this. So we'll be able to go along the way and get more information, get the department in a situation where they can analyze it. But we do have the amendment before us now. Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, this issue is, in my view, at least highly technical. I think some of the future amendments are dealing with issues that we probably all have some background and understanding of what the issues are. But just as a metro area legislator, interested in maintaining a good transit system throughout the metropolitan area, I just don't know, and I'm speaking as an individual, what the impact might be on, as I said in my introductory comments as a representative from Hennepin, you know what, because I think it kind of goes to the core of the distribution of these dollars is what I look at, but the face of it in terms of who remains in and who does not and which taxes are implemented and how those are distributed. So it would be just nice at some point, if the amendment goes on, to have more information about it.
Commissioner Cross, I think we'll be getting a whole lot more information on this one. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, there are provisions in current law under 297A.992 regarding what happens if a county withdraws from CTIB. That basically says that the tax continues in that county until their obligations, their share of the obligations on any bonds that have been issued have been paid. The provision in Article 13 of this bill and as amended by this would allow them to continue a one quarter percent sales tax, what they've got in current law, without having to go to a vote. It would allow them to use it for all the things that they currently are allowed to use it for. There is a provision in Article 13 that basically requires that a county that leaves CTIB has to enter into an agreement with the remaining counties, either in CTIB or if CTIB has been totally dissolved, to deal with the ongoing operating subsidies for any light rail or commuter transit that has already been funded. So that is also covered in here. And so this is basically just putting a limit on if these CTIB counties go above their current 0.25%, do they have to go to a vote, and when do they have to go to a vote? And it's really, they have to go to a vote the first time they want to go over 0.25%, and then they have to go to a vote if they want to use the money for a new project that's going to incur increased operating subsidies.
So, Mr. Chairman, how do we define a new project?
Ms. Dalton?
We've got two projects dealing with light rail that are underway. Up my way, it's Botno, and the state of Minnesota has appropriated money, and it's come from other sources. I think they're either involved with or just completed the engineering on it. So is that a new project? And then, of course, it's not in my area, but there's the Southwest light rail. That's been point through various planning stages and what have you for some time. So I understand what Ms. Dalton is saying, but I'm not totally sure that there's not potentially impacts. And we all know that light rail and related issues has been hotly debated here in the legislature. But beyond that, there's been a debate about the distribution of these dollars that I've read in the media. And I'm just not sure. I'd hope at some point we'd have an opportunity to kind of learn what the bottom line is on this. And I don't know if Ms. Dalton knows the answer to the question about what a new project may or may not be. But we are down the road with some.
Right. Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to refer back to Representative Koznick.
Representative Koznick.
The intent would be on the second part of the requiring a referendum for the voters to have more say if there's a project that incurs ongoing cost to the taxpayers. And that's as you mentioned, you know, some projects could be controversial, and I think the intent of the amendment is to have the voters weigh in if they want to continue to tax themselves for such a project greater than costing more than greater than $10 million per year.
Representative Carl.
I think I've made my concerns known. Mm-hmm. I happen to be a proponent of more transit and more transit options in the metro area, and I'm just concerned about it.
Okay, and members, as you know, this is the governor's office and the department will be weighing in very heavily in conference committee, so this is far from the final vote on this issue. So, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I, too, have been trying to figure out the practical impact of this and how do you interpret it. And, you know, not only is there a question about what is any new transit project and when you become new, but it is a project that requires an operating subsidy of $10 million or more per year. And most of these projects cross county lines. They typically head into downtown because that's sort of the nexus of being able to transfer to other transit lines. And there's a lot of, and I understand that it also would apply to the what's called BRT, Bus Rapid Transit, and ART, Arterial Rapid Transit, not just light rail. And most of those start out in the collar counties or even beyond and then come down into the more core of the metro area. And so they cross many county lines. And I'm wondering, Representative Koznick, if, you know, how do you determine the operating subsidy? Isn't it for the full line as it might cross three counties? Is it the cost within a county's borders? Can we actually break down the operating subsidy by kind of that segments of route? I'm not a transportation expert.
Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler, currently some of those projects that you mentioned are operate under a joint powers agreement amongst the counties, and so they have definitions of how they determine, like you said, if a project were to cross county lines and who pays certain percentages, and that would help determine some of the operating costs per county.
And Mr. Chair, just to clarify, that's helpful, Mr. Representative Koznick. Is the $10 million limit per county or per the route?
Representative
Koznick. Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, would anticipate it because the tax that's being discussed in here is per county, that the operating subsidy would be for those taxpayers affected in that county.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, that seems to potentially put an undue burden on the central counties because, as I said, we have a hub-and-spoke design, and it appears to me that, you know, especially for the new routes that are really about bringing people from the exurbs in, the majority of the users are going to be from the exurbs, but, you know, the stops cost more in the core, and so I'm wondering if this isn't something that's really going to need some work.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. And did I mention that this is going to conference?
Maybe? Yes.
Did I mention that?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Schultz.
So to answer Representative Carlson's question, I think you might want to refer to line 2.14 where it defines what a project means, the initial construction or extension of a minimum operable segment of a new light rail, transit, or commuter rail line. Am I reading the wrong one?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, I'm sorry. Section 4 actually is a definition in the Regional Rail Authority. That does, it's not part of the definitions used in 297A.993.
Thank you for the clarification. So we don't. So is there a definition of the Representative Carlson's question on what a project means or a new project?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, no. But that language already exists in both in 297A.993. There is a requirement that anybody who's imposed the tax, the tax is supposed to expire when a project ends, and they're supposed to have another hearing if there is a new project. And we have not heard any problem with that issue at this point. But again, you're right, there is not a vote right now.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you.
Yep. I have Representative Dabney, then Carlson. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm always intrigued how the Party of Small Government likes to micromanage local governments. There's a number of examples throughout the bill, but Representative Kosnick gives us a new one. My colleagues have rightly focused on what's the definition. Well, what's the definition of the meaning? Definition of the word new. I'm wondering, looking at page 2, line 5, what's the definition of improvement? I know that in the Twin Cities there's been an effort to improve existing transit opportunities with better bus stops. This has been an equity issue. It turned out that the folks who operate the bus system and the folks who help pay for it had a different standard for how many riders needed to be at a bus stop for that bus stop to earn a shelter. Suburban people apparently had a harder time with snow and rain. So it required fewer people in the suburbs waiting at a stop to get a shelter, while city people were tough, apparently, and more folks living in the central cities could be at a stop and not get a shelter. And so the folks have been seeing that appropriately as an equity issue. Cold is cold, wet is wet. And so, you know, the thought was, we should have shelters where people wait for the bus. That's an improvement. So, Representative Kosnick, is a new bus shelter an improvement?
Representative Kosnick.
Mr. Chair, there is a different provision in the bill to fund maintenance and bus shelters throughout the Metro Transit in there. A shelter is an improvement, but it does not have an ongoing operating cost of over $10 million.
Representative Dabney?
Oh, I'm done.
Thank you.
Mr.
Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make it clear that in my comments, I think I said transit generally, and I just happened to use those two light rails as an projects because they're under construction currently in various stages or planning. But we all know that there's also expansions in terms of beyond Hennepin County and so on, of other bus routes and that kind of thing, the one that goes down through, what do we call it, is it the Red Line or something like that, that goes down through some of the southern suburbs. But at any rate, I think this is a complex issue, and I just want to make sure that my concerns are known. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. Other questions? With that, Representative Kosnick renews his motion to adopt the H0004A16 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Item next, let's go to Chair Knobloch's amendment. And members, I've got a couple amendments. I know there's more, so I don't want to miss anybody, so I hope everyone can kind of stick around so that I don't miss anybody. So it'd be my intention to do Chair Knobloch's. It's being passed out, I believe.
Yes.
We won't start until everybody has it. And then it'll be my intention to go to the 0292 amendment next. That's the author's amendment. And there's been a change to this that I wanted to clarify with the committee other than what we spoke of yesterday. And I did call Lee Marquardt on that. I think then we'll go to the A15 amendment. A15, then A14. And that's what I have, but I know there's more. And so I'll leave Mark out and turn over to you for managing the DFL amendment. Thank you. Okay, item next, let's wait till everybody has the amendment.
The one?
Chairman Knobloch will move the H0004E2 amendment. Does everyone have that? Does everybody have the amendment? Hey, Chair Knobloch, two-year amendment, the 4A2 amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I can easily describe this amendment. This bill, House File 387, a portion of which is in the A2 amendment, was heard in this committee and has had a lot of discussion. What the A2 amendment does is it adds private school tuition to the description of education-related expenses that are eligible for the state's education tax credit. And members, currently, as we discussed in the hearing some weeks ago, we have a education tax deduction in state law that has existed in this state since 1955 for private school tuition. That education tax deduction is taken by people of high income. Millionaires can take that education tax deduction, but the education tax credit, which is really more useful for lower income people, for which the education tax deduction has little use, that education tax credit is currently not available for private school tuition. So this would simply equalize it and say that private school tuition is available for the tax credit, just like private school tuition has been available for the education tax deduction since 1955. There is a cost of $23 million in this biennium for this amendment. That amount is still on the bottom line and available for this in this bill. So, members, I'd appreciate your support of the A2 amendment, and I'd stand for questions.
Okay, questions for members on the A2 amendment? Discussion? Chair Dabney.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knobloch, so is there an income limit on who can access this credit?
Chair Knobloch. Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney. Yes, there is. In the bill as amended right now, the income limits for the education tax credit were increased to account for inflation up to the $50,000 level. So, yes, people that, and it's scaled depending on how many children you have. It's, you know, in the $50,000 some range. But basically, it would be only people in that range and below that would qualify for the credit.
Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I would urge a no vote on the A2 amendment. We run into some pretty challenging territory here. We know that fewer and fewer families are choosing private education. I think we should follow the families in the state. We've had a drop about 10 to 15% in the number of students attending private schools in the last 10 years. I think we should listen to parents. I think when we start providing a tax credit for private school tuition, we start to cross a church-state line in providing that subsidy to private schools, to priests and ministers and rabbis and imams who operate those schools, who may be teaching in those schools. That sets a precedence that I don't think is a value that Minnesotans have. Between 90 and 95% of Minnesota students attend their public schools. Our Constitution directs us to public schools and actually prohibits tax support for sectarian schools. I think this sets private school tuition in a place that is unique across our tax code and not a place that we want to go. I'd urge a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Lead Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And just restate some of my concerns I had earlier when Chair Knobloch presented this bill is that I don't think when it comes to education or actually other areas, when we put things into the tax code, we lose accountability as far as what we want to achieve in education. I mean, when we look at the education budget, which we're going to look at here in another half hour in another committee room, we're going to be seeing line items and be able to scrutinize those type of things and also see how they fit into our accountability system, which we have in this state. And when you put the more and more that we put into the tax code that goes really towards education, I think we're losing accountability. And when we talk about education, that is a high-stakes game as far as our future economy and making sure we can close the achievement gap and so forth. So the accountability and the lack of scrutiny in educational accountability is my concern. So thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You. Thank you, Lee Marquardt. Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Representative Nambach, again, for the wealthy, for the great Davids of the world, right, who
uber wealth.
Yes. Right now under tax law, can they take a deduction for private school tuition? Is that so? Like the, is that correct?
Chair Knobloch. Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, yes, that is correct.
And so,
Chair Garofalo.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, for those of the lower income scale who want to access that school choice and have opportunities, they're not allowed to use the credit, which is primarily on the bottom because there's an income test on it. They're not allowed to have school choice. So you're trying to conform it so that the lower and middle classes are going to have the same educational choice opportunities that are available to the Greg Davids of the world.
Chair Knobloch. Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, yes, I'm trying to reduce the discrimination that exists in our tax code now against low-income families.
Chair Garofalo.
Thank you. Easy vote. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Discussion? Chair Knobloch.
Mr. Chair, just quickly, I do need to clarify that the income limit is not $50,000. It starts to phase out at $42,000, although, again, it depends a little bit on the family status. Members, we've discussed this before. It's been upheld, or the tax deduction has been upheld constitutionally. We've had a tax credit for 20 years. It has never failed constitutionally. There are no constitutional issues. We've had the deduction since 1955. I think, like Representative Dabney said, we should provide some choice for people in this state, and I'd appreciate your support.
Discussion. Chair Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Knobloch, you had stated that the deduction was upheld constitutionally. What's the current status of constitutional challenges for credits, which, of course, are a very different animal and could be considered as direct state funding of private schools?
Chair Knobloch.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, there was a United States Supreme Court decision in the last several years that upheld tax credits in an Arizona case.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Lesh.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Okay, we'll go to a vote. Chair Knobloch renews his motion on the H00042 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No. Aye.
Or no? Yeah. Motion prevails. Okay. So, item next, members, is the author's amendment. I will move the 817-0292 amendment. And as we talked yesterday, the major provision was the Main Street Fairness Act. And then we also said that we were looking at, from my bill and crank for the governor, the tribal certain out-of-home placement, about $10 million. And then I had missed the compressed natural gas. That was a Garofalo bill. That's on page 9. And then a couple, one that I, let's see here, Ms. Dalton or maybe Mr. Michael, what on page 9, maximum effort loan aid. I thought that was already in the bill. Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, no, that was inadvertently not included in the bill. So when this amendment's adopted, it will be in the bill.
The chairman's number one priority.
It's appalling.
What am I missing here? We have page 1. I think that's the Vice Chair McDonald's fitness issue. Not that he has a fitness issue, the fitness clubs issue. Yes, yes. I should talk about fitness. And then is the... Okay. Is it, Mr. Mike, why don't you go over with us? I just want to make sure that we have everything on the table here.
Mr. Chairman, just to summarize what's in this amendment, as the chairman indicated, the Indian Child Welfare Aid changes, the CNG excise changes, the marketplace fairness provisions, the small claims tax court jurisdiction provision is deleted because that's in the public safety bill, the fitness facilities, the maximum effort loan. We changed the pre-conformity at the request of MMB to make that a one-time transfer with no refilling of the account. And the de minimis penalty is delayed until January 1, 2019 in Representative Anderson's bill. And then there's a small group of technical corrections that we discovered that don't have any effect on, you know, the dollars or the provisions that are in the bill.
Okay. And so, members, the one that I don't think we talked, we did have to change one, the TEASAN provision that says that, now correct me if I'm wrong here, that says that we have conformity, like when we come back March 7th or February 15th, under certain circumstances, those items will be conformed with. We ran into some problems with having it going forever, so each, I think it's a really good idea. Save a lot of headaches, and so we were backing that off from, you know, continuous to each legislature every 2 years will have to decide if they believe that's a good idea. So we did have to pare that one back to this by, or for 2018, right? Okay, 2018. Questions for members? Okay, I'll renew my motion on the A17-0292 amendment. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Item next, A15. We'll go to A15. That's a David's amendment. I will move the H0004A15 amendment. Ms. Dalton, what am I doing?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what you are doing is making some changes that actually occurred in the Transportation Finance Committee yesterday, and we're trying to mirror their sales tax provisions. So this just ensures that we are mirroring what is in the transportation bill.
So this doesn't ban Southwest Light Rail?
Mr. Chair, no, it doesn't.
Okay. So that being said, any discussion on the E15? And members, there will be another technical fix on the transportation issue. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails on the A15. Item next, A14. Okay, members, we're going to be looking at the A22 amendment. We will not, we'll discuss it, but we will not vote on it until every member has it. Ms. Dalton, okay, I will move the H0004A22 amendment. Ms. Dalton, what am I doing here? Is this my amendment? The Davis amendment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in the transportation bill, there is an account that is established, and the sales tax money that's in the Article 13 here is actually going into this account. So we're also establishing the account in this bill just to make sure everything works.
Okay. Questions for members? I renew my motion on the H0004A22 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Item next. I will, is that mine? Representative Draskowski moves the H0004A14 amendment. Chair Draskowski, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A14 amendment is a repeal of the Greater Minnesota Internship Tax Credit Program, and I have a handout that could go around, too, if we have it, Mr. Chair. I don't know if it's here.
Okay, do we have a handout? Do the pages have a handout? Okay, that should be coming around, Chair Draskowski.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, Representative Pawlowski and I have been tracking this very closely for the last 3 years. This is a program that has a tax credit program that is flailing. So far with this program, there's been $96,000 in development costs and $39,000 in operating costs per year. It's paid out so far in 2 years less than $20,000 of tax credits. Mr. Chair, in 2014, seven businesses signed up and one business claimed a tax credit. In 2015, 15 businesses signed up and 5 businesses claimed tax credit. And so far in 2016, from what I read in some of the departments in the revenue note that they have for the bill or for the amendment, that so far less than 5 have signed up in 2016, and of course we don't know what they're going to claim yet for 2016. So members, this is a tax credit program that's not working and it needs to go away, so I'd like to repeal it.
There's an actual bill out there, isn't there?
Yes.
Yes.
Who's sponsoring that?
There's. I've got a bill, Mr. Chair. Yes.
Who are the co-authors? I'm trying to think.
Pulowski and Draskowski.
Can't be. Who would argue with that? Okay. So, Chair Draskowski has a 14-minute discussion. Representative Schultz.
Thank you. Representative Draskowski, is this in the higher ed bill?
Chair Draskowski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schultz, no, it's not.
Not.
Representative Schultz? Further discussion? Chair Draskowski renews his motion for the H0004A1 4 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Item next. We're done. Just kidding. Okay, Chair Draskowski moves the A19 amendment. We will not vote on it until we have it before us. Chair Draskowski.
Mr. Chair, this is an amendment that had support in the Property Tax Committee. It did not end up in the bill here for some reason, but it's related to the maybe Ms. Dalton can help me out, but it's related to making kind of more of a progressive change between the tiers and the LGA. I think it affects 3 medium-sized cities.
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, the current local government aid formula has 3 different need measures, and so when a city changes population size, it might have a cliff as it changes from one formula to the other. The current smoothing mechanism is for a 500 population change between cities on the small formula and cities under the medium formula, and then the same 500 for cities between 10,000 and 10,500. Basically what this does is it makes the glide path a little longer for those cities between transitioning between the medium and the large city formula, so it goes from 10,000 to 11,000. And it affects 3 cities.
Chair Draskowski.
I ask for your support, Mr. Chair.
Chair Knobloch.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dalton, I guess, can you tell us which 3 cities it affects?
Preston, Spring Valley, and Harmony.
Oh, no, Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, I'm actually going to look at it's one of the cities in Representative Gunther's districts, Fairmont.
Fairmont.
I don't know what the second city is, and the third city actually isn't even affected because it's right now getting 0.8. And it's an effect of about $7,000 of redistribution.
Mr. Chair, I understood Fairmont was in there, and I guess there's one other one. That's it.
Okay. Questions for members? Chair Draskowski renews his motion to amend with the H0004A19 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Now we will pass out the A21 amendment. And this is a Chair Davis amendment. This is the one I called Lead Marquardt on earlier. This was this is a provision in my bill, House file. What's the governor's tax bill? 843. And this is a provision from House File 843. Is the language the same? Ms. Dalton? Okay. So this is from the governor's bill. It has to do with, I believe, this was in the bill last year, 848. It was, I believe, Representative Rena Moran's bill, I think, if I remember correctly. And this is the dealing with the soccer stadium, and maybe Ms. Dalton could describe it for the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this provides the sales tax exemption for the Major League Soccer Stadium, and then it also provides the property tax exemption for the land that it's sitting on.
Representative Schultz.
Mr. Chair, do we know how much that will be exempted from?
Ms. Dalton? Or do we have fiscal?
Yeah.
Ms. Templin? Ms. Schill and Ms. Templin, very good question from Representative Schultz. If you could please answer the Schultz question.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. I believe Ms. Schill is just passing out a summary of a revenue estimate. There is $3.5 million in general fund sales tax reductions. So $3.5 million for the current biennium would be the cost for sales tax with nothing in the tails. And then there is a property tax exemption that has a $100,000 impact in the tails. So a total of $3.5 million in the current biennium and $100,000 in the tails. So the tails are related to the property tax exemption.
Okay. And members, this one I received, it was quite late last night. I was not going to be calling people at the time I got this information, so you would not have been well pleased with me. Maybe would the department like to make any comments or at this time? Or I know you've just seen this. I just have seen this. And again, this was in House File 848. It was in my House File 843 this year. So let's hear from the department. And I, Mr. Cummings, on the fly here. I believe this, the department's fine, but I'll let the department speak for themselves. And then we'll go to member questions.
So,
Mr. Cummings.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm going to do, Mr. Chair, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
And a very good one, I might add.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll speak to Section 47 on line 1.14, Mr. Chair. The soccer stadium is something that the governor is in the governor's budget. It is something that the governor does support. The property tax exemption, this would align the soccer stadium with other types of professional soccer stadiums in our state. It would also continue its current exemption status at that site. Soccer is one of the fastest growing sports within Minnesota in terms of youth involvement, and this is something that, as the governor was looking at his priorities for this next year, this was something that he thought would be a good idea for Minnesota. And so the governor has, in an earlier hearing, has respectfully asked that this is something that Section 47 under this bill is something that become enacted. So thank you for the opportunity to come before this committee today, Mr. Chair.
So why don't you just hang around there in case members have questions of you. Representative Schultz, you still have the floor. Okay, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. When we discussed this in the property tax division, I had pointed out that we had a provision in the Viking Stadium bill that said that the business associated business sales tax exemption only applied for businesses that operated less than 200 days a year, and that was to protect the rest of the downtown restaurants and businesses, that you wouldn't have a competitor who didn't have to pay sales tax on their business. Now, the stadium downtown Minneapolis was designed so that all the restaurants and bars are internal. They're not open to the public year-round, but the fear was that you were going to have first-floor restaurants and bars and other entertainment businesses that would be outward-facing and compete with all the surrounding businesses on a tax advantage basis. And since I raised that question, and I offered to work with the City of St. Paul and others to follow through on that, since I raised that question in committee, I've actually been contacted by some St. Paul restaurant owners who want to make sure that that goes in so that they don't have a business competing with them for customers that are sales tax advantaged if it operates year-round and not just during stadium events. And so I think we should consider adding that as this bill goes forward.
And Representative Loeffler, you bring up some very valid concerns. This one is really on the fly. Representative Marquardt and I worked very closely together on some of these things, and so I did wait till 7:30 to call. I was up at 6, but I thought, nah. I want my relationship with Lee Marquardt to be a good one, so I didn't call. So that being said, no, very, very good valid points, and as this goes through the process, we will be talking about those issues. Chair Anderson S.
Any other questions? Okay, I'll renew my motion, and points from Representative Loeffler well taken. H0004821. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Okay, I believe that's everything that I have, and so I want to make sure that we hear all of the DFL ones. So we're going to need the pages to be freaky fast on passing things out, as you always are, of course. So we'll go to the Dabney Amendment, if that can be passed out, and any additional information you need. It's the A.
A-10.
Chair Dabney moves the A-10 Amendment. Chair Dabney, let's talk about your amendment as it's being passed out.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the A-10 Amendment deletes the private school tax credit vouchers from the bill. There's been... And instead transfers that money to expanding the student loan tax credit to support more Minnesota students in dealing with that student loan debt that so many, particularly our millennial population, is struggling with. There's been some interesting research coming out recently on private school vouchers and finding whether it's conservative research organizations or more moderate ones, finding that vouchers are actually a net negative for the students who transfer to private schools. The Indiana school voucher program found that students lost ground in math, that they actually did worse transferring out of their public schools into private schools. Louisiana, they actually hit a record there, the worst educational research outcome ever seen. Students in using this private school voucher program in that state actually lost ground in reading and math compared to their peers who stayed in the public schools. And in Ohio, the Walton Foundation, not exactly a friend of public education, very interested in private school choice and vouchers and the like, also found that the students who participated in the Ohio voucher program lost ground. The proposal on page 6, the private school voucher program proposed here, Representative Knobloch referred to concerns about discrimination. In our tax code, this proposal discriminates against public schools. While it provides a supersized tax credit for donations to public and private school foundations, it fences off just 10% of the funding provided for donations to private school, to public schools. So it discriminates there. We had some powerful testimony before the committee by some moms. Governor DeVos is looking for bears in public schools. I found some mama bears who came in to talk about how private schools discriminate against their children in their selection, and that private school choice is about schools choosing the student, not students choosing the school. And they were very powerful there. There's no public accountability for public dollars in this private school voucher proposal. And it provides the illusion that for a low-income family living paycheck to paycheck, tax credit sometime or a scholarship may be helpful while they're trying to live paycheck to paycheck. At the same time, we've got students who are paying off student loans who need some support and some assistance. It's a key strategy for our economy so that these folks can dispense with their student loans and buy houses and cars and lift up our economy and take their place. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a no vote on this and a roll call.
Roll call having been requested. There will be a roll call.
I want
a
yes vote on the amendment. No vote on vouchers.
Thank
you. Yes, I want a yes vote on the amendment and no vote on vouchers. Thank you for the Mr. Rubius for the opportunity to clarify.
Thank you, Chair Dabney.
So
Chair Garofalo and then Knobloch.
So Garofalo. Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, if I understand this right, you're eliminating the school choice provision, but you're allowing it to be used to pay down debt. So would some of that debt that they're paying off be from private colleges?
Chair Dabney.
Mr. Chair, if that's where they've chosen, yes. But that's a false distinction or a false comparison you're making, Representative Garofalo, because we have a fully functional K-12 system that works for the vast majority of students in the state, and that we treat higher education differently than we treat K-12. We don't have a voucher system for early ed. We don't have a voucher system for higher education. Students take on debt, public or private schools, and we need to step up and help them with that. But it's not the same as a voucher program. You call it school choice. As we indicated, it's the private schools in the K-12 system choosing the students. It doesn't allow the students to choose the schools.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Devney, if we don't have a voucher system at the higher ed level, what's the GI Bill, and what is the state grant program?
Chair Devney?
Mr. Chair and Chair Groffler, I'd remind you that our state constitution requires us to have a, thorough and efficient? No.
Article 13, Sections 1 and 2.
Thank you. K-12 system. We treat higher education differently. I think we can respect that and not make false comparisons and open up private school vouchers, which the research shows aren't effective for students.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, we have private school vouchers in the state at the higher education level. In fact, we have private school vouchers at the higher education levels right now. If you're in 11th or 12th grade and you're in the PSEO program, you're allowed to go to a private school to obtain that credit. So what the Dabney bill does is say that you can borrow money and then get paid back from a private school, but if you're younger and you want to, and your parents want to exercise school choice for you, you can't have that opportunity. There are certainly ways to attack school choice, but this is one of the more bizarre and unique ones that I've seen. I would ask people to oppose the H.N. Amendment.
Chair Knobloch?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, my friend Representative Dabney and I have had many debates on this. I guess I would say, first of all, I'm not familiar with the particular studies that he's citing, but he's talking about various voucher programs in other states. These are not voucher programs. These are tax credit programs that are in the bill. There's no money going directly to schools through the tax credit programs that are in the bills, in this bill. So I think that's a false distinction. There's lots of data out there that I could provide, and we've talked about and had testimony about tax credit provisions such as we have in this bill being effective in other states. Secondly, I guess I would dispute Representative Dabney's statement that we have a fully functional K-12 system in this state. We have the highest education gap, achievement gap in the country in this state between minorities and white students. I guess I would hardly call that a fully functional K-12 system, and I believe that some of the provisions we have in this bill will help to address that. And finally, in regard to accountability, I would say the ultimate accountability is with the parents of the students, and they will have more choices and thus the ability to exercise that accountability if we pass this bill. Thank you.
Chair Carlson.
Now, Mr. Chairman, back a number of years ago when I chaired the Education Committee, the point distinguishing higher education from, now we would say, early ed through grade 12, when the higher ed financial aid programs were tested in the courts, part of that decision distinguishing higher ed was based on maturity and age of the students. And so that was part of what the courts ruled several years ago, as opposed to when we're talking about, and I think one of the people commenting earlier referenced younger children. So there was a distinction in one of those court cases that we had testimony on many years ago before the Education Committee. So just throw that out as part of the distinction, because I was involved with both K-12 and higher ed through the years. And this issue has surfaced before, but I would encourage, and I won't repeat the arguments presented by Representative Dabney, but I would encourage support for his amendment.
And members, this issue's been around a long, long time. I think, you know, everybody's going to vote the way they're going to vote. I am supporting the 810 amendment, but this is one where your minds are made up on this. Representative Schultz.
Just want to make a clarification to what was previously said. We cannot blame the achievement gap solely on our public schools. There are so many other things that go into the achievement gap that we need to address here. One is poverty. So I'm really tired of hearing the argument that we're blaming our public schools for the achievement gap because there's so many other things that we could do to address it that we're not.
You're tired of the argument? I'm just kind of tired. Okay. So we have a roll call being requested. Any other discussion? Chair Dabney moves the H0004A10 amendment. The committee legislative assistant will call the roll call.
Davids.
Yes.
McDonald.
Yes.
Cargo.
Marquardt.
Well, now I'm confused.
You should be in Ways and Means with Erdahl.
It's my fault. I started.
I think I might have started it.
Yes.
Anderson.
No.
Applebaum. Carlson.
Yes.
Christensen.
No.
Dabney.
Give me a moment here.
Yes.
Detmer. Drazkowski.
No.
Erickson.
No.
Garofalo.
No.
Grimhagen.
Absolutely not.
Protoss.
Nein, nicht jetzt.
No. Knobloch.
No.
Kosnick.
No.
Lesch. Loeffler.
Yes.
Loon. Metza.
Yes.
Petersburg.
No.
Schultz.
Yes.
Spokum. Wills.
No.
Detmer.
No.
There being 7 ayes and 13 nays, the motion does not prevail. Item next, Lead Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. The next amendment will be the A20 amendment, but I know education finance is starting right now, and Representative Dabney, myself, and maybe some others are on there. I would just ask the Chair's kind of adjustment, so if we have to go for roll call votes, that we make sure everyone has an opportunity to vote to get someone out of the other committees.
Lead Marquardt, would it be okay if there is a roll call on an amendment that I will send a page? Where is K-12? Is that five? Okay. We'll send somebody down there to, I don't know, do a hand signal or something. I don't want to interrupt their committee that either, but who's the page that will go down?
I'll go down there and signal.
Mr. Rubis will do that when, there's not a roll call yet. He can be Rubis will be standing by there. No. Point very well taken. We will send Mr. Rubis when you see the suit of that color. Come on back.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I think we have 3, maybe 4 amendments to go. So it's not, we're not talking about all that much.
That
so thank you, Mr.
Chair.
We
need to have a chance for a roll call. Okay. Next amendment, Congressman Loeffler.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A20 amendment now that it's getting around. And what this does is it reestablishes the expansion of the working family tax credit, as was done in the tax bill that was pocket voted last year. Most of you, I think, are familiar with the working family tax credit, but it encourages work. You only earn it if you earn a paycheck. And it is helps workers and their families get off to a good start. It benefits 372,000 families across Minnesota, or households across Minnesota, with an average of 12% of all taxpayers benefiting from this. There's a slightly higher dependency on this and reliance on this in greater Minnesota than in the metro area, but every county has at least 9% of its households benefiting from this, and it's up to 16-17% in some of our poorer rural counties. There's been extensive research on it, and in terms of its benefits to families, in terms of these are the people who are really living paycheck to paycheck. Maximum income is around $50,000, then there's a little bit of a phase out, but it really helps the people whose whole income has to go to the basics, shelter, utilities, food, transportation, and they have a hard time dealing with the bumps along the road, the unexpected things that always happen. The car breaks down, you have an unexpected dental or medical expense, other things. It helps them kind of manage those kind of situations as they come, and it has incredible economic benefits to both our community and our state because these dollars are recirculated. They're spent in the local economy, whether it's at the, you know, paying for that local doctor's visit or the car repair or whatever. And it has been shown to get kids off to a good start. There's actually national research that shows better school performance for kids with just a little extra when you're living right on the edge. To fund this, the amendment repeals the expansion of the estate tax, which would benefit people whose estate is over $1.8 million plus. We have some special provisions for farmers and small business owners, but it benefits only about 1,100 people a year who pay any portion of estate tax, and even only about 10% of that actually go up to the maximum that would be in the underlying bill. And so I think we have a chance here to clearly support a successful program that has been used by at least 12% of our households and 370,000 people, or we can relieve the beneficiaries of inheritances from 1,100 very wealthy people. And with that, I'd be glad to answer questions.
Thank you for your amendment. And the way I read this, this is balanced and in order. I think we're good there. Questions from members? Lee Marquardt, and then Representative Schultz. Lee Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Members, this is a good program. It rewards work, rewards families, and it was in the tax bill last year. And you know, the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis did research on the earned income tax credit, the federal one, which is very similar. And it showed, as Representative Loeffler has stated, it increased employment from single mothers, reduced child poverty, reduced welfare caseloads, and created a better transition when people move from welfare to work. It is a program that works. And while it's pretty much 50-50 as far as those who get the credit between rural and Minnesota, 14% of all filers in rural Minnesota get the working family credit to about 12% in the metro. And in fact, there's a county breakdown, but like the county of Wadena, 20% of the filers use this credit. And it's about an average of $700 to $800. And as Representative Loeffler said, it's used for child care and transportation and things to better people and help them, you know, achieve the American dream. But, you know, people think it's parents, but there's also grandparents who are raising families that also qualify for this credit. So, it was in last year's tax bill for a reason, because it really has always had bipartisan support, both on the federal level and state level, and we talked about this before. So, members, I'd ask that you support the Loeffler Amendment.
Thank you, Lee Marquardt. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also ask that members vote yes on this amendment if you're serious about addressing poverty and the achievement gap that you obviously do care about. I would ask for your support, because here is one policy that can address both poverty and the achievement gap.
Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Representative Loeffler, when we first kind of discussed this issue in the tax committee, one of my concerns is that this is based off of the income tax credit on the federal level. And they're showing that there are wrongful payments at a level of 26%. And so I'm just concerned there is no reform in this to try and address that piece of the working family tax credit, because I don't think that we want to have tax dollars being going to people that, one, don't qualify, and two, that maybe we're doing overpayments and things of that nature. And I'm just really concerned that there's no reform on this piece. And I think that we need to do that. I think we owe that to the people of Minnesota, and would hope that you would instead take a closer look at this program and figure out how can we make sure that there's not fraud, abuse, overpayments, and the like happening here in the state of Minnesota.
Okay, questions for members? Okay, we'll let Representative Laffer wrap it up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to have a roll call because I think this is a clear issue of priorities. But to Representative Anderson's point, and I did look at that even further after
Representative Laffer, roll call being requested. There will be a roll call.
Thank you. After initial discussion, I looked into it even further than I'd had some information beforehand. And the federal government actually, based on that, made changes in the federal EITC and how it's processed by the IRS and has addressed some of those, many of those issues. And we, of course, use the federal tax return as our basis. They found that a lot of it was confusion about which parent gets to claim this. Some parents mistakenly thought both parents could claim it, and they've made the instructions much clearer. They've cross-matched things. And so my understanding it is much of that has been addressed, and that this program, I think, has definitely shown its value in terms of helping people throughout the state get their families off to a good start, get their households off to a good start, and it would add to a big, huge tax reduction bill, a component that actually helps the working poor, which we don't have right now.
Thank you, Representative Laffer. And Lee Marquardt, we've got a texting system going back and forth, so they've been notified that we will be voting. We will just pause just a little bit here. Okay, yeah. So that makes a lot of sense, actually. But I guess, you know, I wasn't going to bring up last year's bill at all, but I was teasing. $100 million. All I can think of was $100 million was right there. It was right there. And for that reason alone, I wanted a bill signed, but that's, like I said, sometimes you just have to live with disappointment. So that's where we're at, and I think members understand this amendment, so we will have the committee legislative assistant call the roll.
Davids?
No.
McDonald?
No.
Marquardt?
Yes.
Anderson?
No.
Carlson?
Yes.
Christensen?
No.
Dabney? Detmer?
No.
Gruskowski?
No.
Erickson. Garofalo.
No.
Grunhagen.
No.
Protas.
No, thank you.
Knobloch.
No.
Kosnick.
No.
Lesh. Loeffler.
Yes.
Loon. Metza.
Yes.
Petersburg.
No.
Schultz.
Yes.
Slocum. Wills.
We'll pause just a little bit here, so we'll just hold the roll open for a bit here. How many members? Oh, Erickson.
Erickson.
No.
I think it's just
Lead Marker, we there
subtotals here, kind of a running total. There are five ayes and 13 nays. There are 22 present. Steve Marquardt?
I know Representative Dabney wanted to vote on this one.
Then we will wait for Representative Dabney.
But, Mr. Chair, if you wanted, we could start passing out at least the next amendment.
Let's do that.
And that would be the A3 amendment, just to save some time.
Let's pass out the A3.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We can certainly do that. And we'll wait for Chair Dabney here. And members, this time of year, this happens. It'll be three, four committees that you're all on at the same time. So maybe look a little bit while we're in the middle of a roll call here. Maybe look at the A3 amendment a little bit here. Can't really move it yet. We'll just hold. Yeah. If education members need to get back and have voted, you can certainly do that at this point, and we'll call for you if there's a roll call on the next whatever future ones we have. Okay, members, you should be receiving, you should have received the A3, and now we're going to have the 0288 passed out. But the next one will be A3.
Mr. Chair, we did
send,
we did send someone down.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
Lee Marquardt.
We would have no objection if you wanted to move to the next amendment and discuss it, even though we're in the middle of a roll call. I don't think we can. Or maybe we can't do that. But
well, I guess we can do whatever we want.
Well, that's...
You couldn't take any action, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I don't have any rules, do I?
Okay.
No, not on the rules. We'll wait. Thanks. We'll wait. It's fine.
Couldn't take any action.
Lee Marquardt, in the old days, you could miss a vote and then put in what your what how you would have voted into the record.
Really? And this Representative Slocum is
on the floor too.
On the floor too.
Remember that, Representative Carlson?
Oh yes.
Yeah, how were you? What I meant to say was,
you could even if a person,
Carlson,
Mr. Chairman, if a even if a person made a mistake, you could have inserted in the journal that your intention was to vote differently than what the record showed.
I used to vote on stuff, and then I'd hear from back home, and then I'd say that the way I really meant to vote was, and then they called that they liked the first way, then I said, well, that's how I voted.
Mr. Chairman, I think you had to do it, though, before.
Well, you still record? Hate when that happens. So. Well, the good old days.
Mr. Chairman, I was doing this a number of years ago, and one of the people from the other side of the aisle protested that I had kept the vote open to get a member back, as we're doing now. And the very next day, he made the same request. He said, I'm going down to a different room, because we were at this time of the year, and he said, I'd really like to vote on this issue. He said, would you keep it open? And I said, well, that's fine, but you protested yesterday when I did that for another member. Chair Carlson, the arrow was right through my heart, and I said, but we will accommodate you, and we did. So you never know.
Dabney.
Aye. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Go vote. Okay.
Thank you.
There being 6 ayes and 13 nays, the amendment, the Loeffler A20 amendment, is not adopted. Item next, Representative Marquardt. Representative Marquardt moves the H000483 amendment.
Representative Metzler.
I thought Metzler was 288.
Representative Metzler has the A12 amendment.
Mr. Chair, the 288, so I would move the A3.
Okay, so Representative Metzler moves the H0004A3 amendment. Representative Metzler.
And
to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because it's relevant, and this is the bill I discussed with you yesterday in regard to the commercial industrial exemption, the 288 in historic years when we've done that, because mining taxes or mining companies don't pay property taxes, they pay production tax in lieu of. This has been the standard practice that the legislature has taken in 288. So I'm not going to offer that today. I just wanted to bring it to the committee's attention as we were moving forward and have a discussion about it. It will be in the Senate tax bill, is my understanding. But just so folks know, that those companies would not receive any benefit to that. And so with that, if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, I can move on to the actual A3.
Let's go, if it's okay with your amendments. Let's do the A3 amendment, yep. Then we'll have you make some comments on the 288, which would be then withdrawn if that's what you desire.
Yep.
Okay, so Representative Metzler moves the H0004A3 amendment. To your amendment, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So essentially, members, what I'm doing here is reviving a little of the Don't Stop Believing bill from last year. And essentially adding a little bit more into our local government aid, county aid, and into our township fund. And what it would mean is essentially in fiscal year 19, we'd be giving our local communities about $68 million. In our county need and county equalization aid, we'd be adding about $50 million into that formula and about an additional $4 million into our township aid, and then moving forward into fiscal year 20, it would be an additional $58 million roughly into our local government aid, an additional $50 again into our county need and equalization aid, and another additional $4 million into our township aid. And I believe that many of the communities have been requesting these increases, especially in greater Minnesota, where we haven't seen the same growth as other parts of the state. And again, with the Don't Stop Believing theme from last year, I thought that this might be a prudent way not to dissolve the total intent of the bill, but rather to redirect half of the money, put on the inflator again on the general levy, and divvy it up to our communities all over the state.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Metzler. Just a quick question, maybe Ms. Dalton or Mr. Michael.
No, he did
not. Does this have, or to you, Representative Metzler, does this have any of the reform that the AMC was looking at, or is we just talking money here? Representative Metzler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it has many of the reforms incorporated, yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, questions for members? And members, I would respectfully ask for a no vote. At this point, and again, this is going to conference committee, and there will be many discussions on these very issues. Further discussion to the A3 amendment. Chair Anderson asks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Metsa, did you talk with Representative Applebaum about this amendment at all? Or?
Representative Metsa?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Anderson, we discussed it in our caucus yesterday, yes.
Chair Anderson, yes.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Metsa. I'm surprised by that because this is actually going to be a tax increase on the area that he represents. It's a tax increase on the area that I represent. It's a tax increase on the area that Representative Pryor represents, Representative Halverson, Representative Mason. So I'm just surprised that he'd want to move forward with that given those members, and I'm going to be voting no. So.
Well, after your description, it does look better. And further discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Lead Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, this still exempts the first $100,000, which I think was in the tax bill last year, was the first $100,000 that I think many of us voted for. So it is reducing, cutting taxes under current law. So what this does, it is cutting taxes under current law for businesses and Main Street businesses around the state. But what it does do, it maintains the state and local relationship in making sure that our constituents back home are getting the best possible service at a relatively lower cost to them. And, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit before, but local government aid comprises a huge percent of budgets in rural Minnesota, especially, and some in the metro and suburbs. But it does allow you to go out and make sure you have that well-funded, well-staffed police department that is so vital to people's safety. So the county program aid, that's another big one. As you've heard time and time again, our counties have a lot of mandates placed on us by the state. And so this helps cover those. And again, these dollars, you know, we think of them as going to cities and counties like city halls and county offices, but these dollars go to people. It goes to our seniors to help them stay in their homes. It goes to families to know that they have nice, safe neighborhoods and parks. And it goes to our small businesses so that they can help keep property taxes down, too. So it's important to create a little more balance in this bill by going with the Metsa amendment.
Representative Knobloch and then Metsa and anyone else. Representative Knobloch.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if I can ask Representative Metsa a question, and that would be, you said are the other reforms or changes in this too, so is the new county program aid formula part of this, Representative Metsa?
No, it's not.
Let's go to Ms. Dalton on that. Ms. Dalton?
I would defer to Mr. Hines.
Mr. Hines, why don't you join us at the table here, sir? We haven't heard from you for a while.
Sure.
Gentlemen, please state your name. Who represents the record, please?
I'm Mary Davids. I'm Sean Williams from House Research. And yes, the county program aid reforms are included in the bill.
So what the AMC was proposing, I think that's the Davids bill, actually, isn't it? I think it is. Fine piece of legislation, I might add. Mr. Pines, is the whole Davids bill, what number is that? Any idea?
Who knows?
It's a backer bill. Am I number two on it? Why are I number? I thought I was carrying that thing. Oh, whatever.
Okay.
I don't want to get in that debate. It's a backer bill, I believe, right? Is that correct, Mr. Williams?
Mr. Chair, yeah. House File 609.
And it's not from my number backer. Two on it?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure who's number two on it.
Well, we'll worry about that later. Actually, I'm not going to worry about that. Okay, so the reforms of the AMC are in there. Chair Knobloch.
Mr. Chair, then I just want to make the point to people that while this shows an increase in county program aid, people should realize that this increase is distributed very differently across the state, and there are counties like mine, some of mine that I represent like Benton, that effectively get no increase with the new formula, even though you've got $25 million a year more in money for this.
Okay. Questions from members on the A3 amendment? You'd like to wrap it up, Representative Metza?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think we should do a roll call on this. It is an important issue, and, you know, just in response to Representative Knobloch or Chair Knobloch, we have the winners and losers in all of our formulas, and I think right now, you know, part of that reason, if I'm not mistaken, is actually because your region is growing and the population is growing, meaning there are more investments being made in homes, driving up property wealth and other things, and in other areas of the state where we aren't as fortunate, it's to help equalize that, essentially, and make it so we have the same opportunity to grow like you are right now.
Mr. Hines, no counties would lose under the Metza formula. It's just that some that are currently losing would be gaining.
Yeah.
Is that true, Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm not sure.
Okay, I don't think there's any cuts. Shame, but there may be some that don't go off, like Benton, for example. Okay, so I really like this, but I encourage members to vote no. Okay, Chair Daskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just look forward to voting against the tax increase.
Okay. With that, any further discussion? Okay, the committee legislative assistant, Ms. Windsor, will call the roll.
David.
No.
McDonald. Marquardt.
Yes.
Anderson.
No.
Excuse me. Have you notified Ed Finance? Okay. Okay, please continue.
Carlson.
Yes.
Christensen.
No.
Dabney. Detmer.
No.
Draskowski.
No. Did you want to come to your bill?
Erickson.
I think I did not.
Garofalo.
No.
Grunhagen.
No.
Bertas.
Still no.
Knobloch?
No.
Kosnick?
No.
Lesh? Loeffler?
Yes.
Loon? Metza?
Yes.
Petersburg?
No.
Schultz?
Yes.
Slocum? Wills?
Okay, we will pause for a little bit. I think during this pause, I think since, Representative Metza, you said we're on a Metza amendment, could you describe the 0288, just since we're not voting on it?
You're awesome. Mr. Chairman, I just want to say if I always knew that I could take testimony while there was an open roll call vote in committee, I would have done it years ago. So I'm in awe. That's awesome.
Well, President Groffel, that's the key and the beauty of no rules.
Yeah.
So let's just hear, since we could either play our theme song or something, or
pass.
Yeah, pass. I'm starting to question your loyalty. He doesn't like my theme song. He doesn't like my theme song. Can you believe that? Oh, it's so hard to take. Let's just talk a little bit about this. Okay. Representative Metza, what were we doing on the 0288?
Yep. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A170288 essentially, again, similarly to the commercial industrial reduction that we'd be doing, would allow the mining companies that do not pay property taxes and have a production tax in lieu of, essentially get a general fund rebate through our TEDF account that runs through the committee here, and Jobs has also had this in their jurisdiction. But it would allow a 15-cent, which would be the equivalent under the bill, the way it's currently written with my my amendment, I'm assuming, which won't be adopted. It would be a little bit less in the A3, but this would allow a 15% or 15-cent tax equivalent in production to be given back to those companies so that they receive the same percentage as the other businesses across the state that represent, or Chair Druskowski is helping out here in commercial, industrial property tax relief.
Okay, so when we finish the roll call, we'll talk a little bit more about this.
Jerry.
Committee Legislative Assistant will continue with the roll.
McDonald.
No.
Lead Marquardt, was there someone that wanted this one?
No.
Lead Marquardt?
Mr. Chair, we have a person making a quick check down to education.
Okay, thank you.
And then he'll be back with quickly.
Thank you. And we're doing fine on time. We're good.
Daphne.
How's it going down there?
A little slower start.
That's not a good sign. Okay, so anyone else? Lead Marquardt?
We have one more amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I'd like to...
On the vote here?
Oh.
Any other members?
No. We're good, Mr. Chair.
The Green Legislative System will close the roll. And there being 6 ayes and 12 nays, the A3 Metz Amendment is not adopted. Thank you, Representative Metz, for the presentation. Okay, item next is, let's go. Any other comments on the 0288 Amendment, Representative Metz? Or let's go to Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question to Representative Metz. When was the mining tax adopted in lieu of paying property taxes?
Representative Metz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This would go back many, many, many generations to the 1930s and 50s when it was changed up a few times, but this has been a standard practice up north for many years. And then the late 1970s and early 1980s, some adjustments were made as well.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to clarify that because that is the system of paying local property taxes that was chosen as a benefit for jobs in the region with regard to mining and the production tax. And so the mining companies have never been subjected to the fourth tax, the state general levy, that all other businesses in the state have been subjected to. So the relief that we're providing in the state general levy is for this burden that the mining companies have never endured in the first place, and to suggest that they should get a reduction in the local property tax would mean, in a fairness or a policy position, we should do the same with regard to the other levels of taxes, county and state and city, for all other businesses in the state as well. I would urge a no vote.
We're not going to be voting on just some information here. Chair Knobloch?
Well, Mr. Chair, and I don't want to take a lot of time on this, but I just was trying to understand it too, Representative Metz. And I guess I'd appreciate your commenting on what Representative Hertaus said. And I guess also my question is, so as I understand this is about a 60% reduction in the per ton tax that they would be paying. Is that correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 60% reduction in the per ton tax?
Right, because it looks like, as I'm looking, Mr. Chair, at page 1, line 7, it seems to say they're paying 25 cents a ton now, and you'd be reducing it by 15 cents. So that'd be 60% if I'm right about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Knobloch. That would be specific to that TEDF account, so it would not be, they pay right around $9.62 a ton right now. And so this would be specific to the TDF, which is actually an account that we've done to incentivize reinvestment in the region. It is a dollar-for-dollar match currently, and so for every dollar that they receive in this account in the TDF, which is correct at 25 cents, they would have a dollar-for-dollar match. So essentially it would be bringing money in, and they can only get the money if they're making investments back into the property. So.
Chair Knobloch? Okay, and I won't belabor this. Just one last question, Mr. Chair. Just, so how was it calculated that a 15-cent tax was the right amount to deduct? And did you look at, like, what the property value of all the mines was and then look at how that was affected by the statewide tax, if they had been affected by the statewide tax, or Representative Metza, how did you do it?
Representative Metza?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Knobloch. I think we went back to 2001 when the last commercial industrial incentive was given, and it essentially took the same percentages there and went off the past precedent that the state had from that 2001 rebate.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Metz. I guess I just wanted to learn some more about it, and if it comes up, we'll learn even more. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, Representative Metz withdraws his A17-0288 amendment, members, and we'll be hearing more about this as we move forward. Okay, is this the last one? Okay. Item last, Lead Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A17 amendment.
Lead Marquardt moves the H0004A17 amendment to your amendment, Lead Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. What this does is it maintains the Homestead Credit State Refund and Renter's Credit amount as it is in this biennium. But then for the Homestead Credit State Refund, instead of it just being one time, as is in this bill, it goes $45 million, $45 million into the next 2 years. And the Renter's Credit does the same, $45 million and $45 million. And the dollars are taken into the tails from the estate tax reduction. And so, members, the Homestead Credit State Refund is direct property tax relief, and it's another program that's been always seen with bipartisan approval. And I think it's better policy if not only with the raise for 1 year, which I totally support in the bill, the $58 million, but we should keep that going, at least as much as we can. And so what this bill does, it directs the Revenue Department to come up with a plan to use those dollars, going first by increasing the maximums on the Homestead Credit State Refund and the Renter's Credit, then going to the threshold, and then going to the co-payments. On the Renter's Credit, I want to talk a little bit about. I agree with Representative Truskowski's efforts in the property tax bill to start looking at, yes, Representative Truskowski.
This is a corn pile, Mr. Chair. It's part of the corn pile that was given to me today.
We don't allow props. You're out of order. Lead Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, Representative Truskowski.
I think that means something.
I'm not catching that. Okay. But at any rate, I do agree, and I've always said this, whether or not it's a local government aid formula or a county program aid formula or whatever, that we have to be matching what we're trying to do. Otherwise, you lose total credibility just arbitrarily throwing things out. So you try to, LGA come up with need factors and all this type of thing. And so I do think we should be matching, what is the amount of rent that's constituting property taxes. And so I do agree with that part. The part I disagree is that you wind up doing this unless you make some changes by going from the 17% that's constitute property taxes as a portion of your rent down to 16.5 in the metro all the way down to 14% in the rural areas, is you're going to see cuts. You're going to see that. And So I'd like to see some sort of an adjustment where you do that, but then still maintain the funding, because what you're going to see in this, in the current bill, is about an $84 million drop in the next 2 years, in 20 and 21, into the out years, for the renter's credit. And it's going to be a loss of revenue for folks, and we know from the data that in many of our rural counties, several of them, 50% or more of those recipients of the renter credit are senior citizens or people with disabilities. And those dollars make a big difference. So what this does, it does not change the formula, even though I agree as far as matching what Representative Druskowski has done, I think is good. This maintains the 17%, but basically increases renters' credits into the future to make sure that our renters and those where we have high property taxes in comparison to incomes can receive relief. So
thank
that's
you,
my
Mark
amendment,
Port.
Mr. Chair.
Comments on the A17 or questions from members? Okay, with that, did you request a roll call? Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no.
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. Thank you, Lead Marquardt, for the amendment. I see no further amendments. I just want to make sure, Lead Marquardt, or on this side of the table, any more amendments that I'm missing? Okay, so I will move for the staff to harmonize the language in the bill and the spreadsheet to reflect the intent of the tax committee. Harmonize? Okay, I guess that's very fitting. I guess that's what we have to say. That's it? Okay, so I move for the staff to harmonize the language in the bill and spreadsheet to reflect the intent of the tax committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now we have the bill, House Bill 4, as amended. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions before you go to a vote. I'm looking at the summary, page 44, I think it's on, dealing with the acquisition of land through the trust fund. And there's the word under subdivision 5, where it's a state acquisition of land restrictions, and then the word unconstitutional is used. Says it would prohibit the state from using money from the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund to acquire land if the provision for the one-time county trust fund payment is found unconstitutional. I'd like to ask, maybe, I know this came up out of the property tax division. I don't recall that we had in the full tax committee a hearing on this whole issue of the purchase of land through the trust fund, but either the chair of property taxes or staff could enlighten us, because the way I read that is then that would stop any purchase of land. And I'm wondering if that's the intent of the property tax division to do that or not. And maybe Ms. Dalton was ready to comment. But
Chair Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Carlson. Yes, that's what it says. It says that if the court would find the provisions in the bill that provide for property tax to be paid for with the legacy funds through the mechanism that we have in the bill, that the future land purchases from the legacy amendment couldn't be made.
And Mr. Chairman, I find that troubling, that it would, as I read that, then prevent any future purchases of land. But what, if I might ask Representative Druskowski, what's the policy reason behind that?
Or Chair Druskowski?
Maybe Ms. Dalton can help us, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Dalton,
to recall. That was 2 years ago when we put that in.
Ms. Dalton. Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, this is a statutory provision. The intent is basically to slow down land purchases until it can be rethought if indeed this is found, if this alternative is found to be unconstitutional then there's nothing that stops future legislature to come in and say, okay, now you can make land purchases again, but it would stop land purchases in the meantime until the legislature would have a chance to rethink how they are going to deal with this issue.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, this is language. I was looking at the summary here rather than the bill. So this is language that was adopted 2 years ago about the unconstitutionality. Is that what I'm hearing?
Ms. Stahl?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the language that's sitting in this now is quite a bit different than the language that passed in the House 848 2 years ago. During the last two-year process, there's been a lot of tightening up of the language to try to address the constitutionality issues that were raised in a memo by the AG's office. But the reality is there are people on both sides of this. So this is basically saying,
so
if it doesn't work, let's take a stop and figure out what will.
When Ms. Elfin says 2 years ago, it must have been in a provision in something other than the tax bill then, or because there was not a tax bill the last 2 years.
Mr. Rub it in.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, it was in the House Omnibus 2015 tax bill as it left the House floor.
Chair Carlson, you're correct. That didn't go.
So it didn't become law then. It was discussed 2 years ago.
Chair Carlson?
Well, I guess I have some concerns about the fact that it would stop all land purchases. I raised that as a question so that people get a chance to think about that particular provision dealing with constitutionality. I mentioned that I had another question, and Mr. Chairman, it deals with the plastic bag issue, and I think it impacts, to my knowledge, only on the city of Minneapolis, but again, looking at the plastic bag issue, it would prohibit, I'm looking at the summary again, a local government from imposing a fee or tax on merchant-provided bags. And I did have a bill a number of years ago statewide dealing with this issue, so it's an issue that's of interest to me. But what I find problematic is that we're preempting then with that particular provision a decision that was made by a local unit of government. And I find that philosophically quite troubling. We debated that when we were dealing with some labor issues, and one of the points that was made during that debate was if we go down this road of preempting decisions by local units of government, where might it lead? And I just point out we now have another provision here that prohibits a local unit of government from doing what they felt was appropriate for their cities. Just as a side comment, I have a son that lives in L.A., and I go out there with my wife and I to visit him quite a bit. And they're dealing with the bag issue. It's kind of interesting. It doesn't take you but a trip or two to the store to develop the habit of bringing your own bags. That's an option that sometimes is available here, but there you're charged a fee if you purchase a bag at a local grocery store. And if I go out to purchase some groceries, my wife quickly reminds me, she'll say, Linda, do you have your bags with you? And so I say yes, because after a day or two you can develop the habit. But at any rate, I find that troubling. I don't happen to represent the city of Minneapolis, but I was involved in the issue a few years ago on a statewide basis. And so others may want to comment, but I find that a troubling part of the bill because of the preemption.
Discussion, but bill as amended. Chair Graskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just maybe report in here a little bit from the division report discussion. Representative Carlson, we in the division struggled with a bunch of different items dealing with cities that are in, mainly cities, but local jurisdictions generally, that are engaging in creative revenue generation strategies. And certainly this was looked at as one of them, one that is being used by some cities to, or at least one city, to engage in kind of a social engineering outcome. And this one was really obscure in that they charged the fee, and then the fee was kept by the grocer. And so I don't know that I still fully understand how that works, but really we're seeing, and this was one of probably five or six items that we talked about, where local units of government engaging in a bunch of different revenue generating strategies that sometimes are not transparent and sometimes likely not authorized by law. So this was one that the committee felt pretty strongly. And it was maybe pretty controversial, I'll have to say, within the committee, but at least the majority of the committee believed that we shouldn't have this type of fee structure happening in cities throughout the state.
Thank you, Chair Drazkowski. Chair Carl.
Yeah, maybe just a quick question, Mr. Chairman. I live in close proximity to Minneapolis, so I'm aware that Minneapolis has an ordinance. And being that you said, Representative Drazkowski, you had quite a discussion, is this impacting then on other cities beyond Minneapolis or not? I'm asking that question because I simply don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, I believe the answer is yes. If not, I'll be corrected by someone.
I believe Representative Schultz in Duluth. Well, it would apply to everybody, but currently I believe Duluth and Minneapolis are...
It currently has, Mr. Chairman, ordinances,
yeah.
Is what I'm talking about.
I believe so.
So there are other cities, so it's broader than just one city.
Correct. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I share the concern about us trying to micromanage decisions by local elected officials, and we had quite a bit of discussion and some amendments in the division dealing with that. The bill still has a LGA deduction or county program aid deduction for anyone who contributes to the World's Trade Expo that's being proposed. But there's been some real confusion in that. I think you just need to know that in Minneapolis, this is not a revenue source for the city of Minneapolis. The Minneapolis ordinance just permits local retailers, if they choose, to put a fee on providing a paper bag to a customer. And so it's a way for local businesses to potentially recoup any costs in the transition. It does not in any way provide a revenue source to the city of Minneapolis.
Discussion to the bill is amended. I represent Metza. It would be my intention, members, to take all questions from members and then let Lead Mark Ord and myself wrap it up. Or you can say more stuff, too. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to clarify your awesomeness and confirm it, you were number two on House File 609, which was the Backer bill.
I knew I was somewhere on that, yeah. Okay, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, we've heard a lot of words going around. One of them was micromanage. But if you really think about the laws that we pass up here, the legislation that we do here in the state of Minnesota, up at St. Paul at least, other than criminal law, just about everything is micromanaging of somebody or something in regards to indicating what we can and cannot do. So it just kind of makes it into a perspective issue on where we deal with it. And I just wanted to comment on that.
Thank you, Mr. Petersburg. Any other comments? Before I go to Lead Marquardt, I would just mention that I did talk to Commissioner Bowerly and offered her more time today. She said that she got her points on the record and that Mr. Cummings would be here today as a resource. So I don't want anybody to think that I'm cutting the department off in any way. Further questions for members? Chair Drazkowski.
Mr. Chair, before you and Lead Marquardt wrap up here, I just want to, and I know you're going to formally recognize them at the end, but our staff is just amazing here. You talk about awesomeness. Their ability to almost at times almost divine what some of us want to bring forward. I had one or two of the staff members here with items today that were saying, well, do you want this? And it just they're always ahead of the curve, and Mr. Chair, further ahead than you and I are for sure. So thank you to all of them, and it really makes our job much, much easier here. So they're amazing in the tax area.
Thank you, Chair Drazkowski. And I will agree with those remarks. And, of course, this is not our last tax meeting. We will have other tax meetings where we'll be doing some more formal things. But with that being, because I think we need to hear the tax provisions of the omnibus bills coming through. So I think Monday's our first one, and then we'll work through those bills, the tax provisions, I might add. Okay, any other comments from members? And thank you, Chair Drazkowski, for that. Lee Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I really want to thank Chair Davids for your approach to the committee. I think you heard every bill we wanted to hear. I know this isn't the last meeting, but just up to the tax bill. And you included a lot of the DFL minority bills, which is very, I appreciate that very much. And just your approach, and I've enjoyed working with you, and you're keeping me informed on things, I'm keeping you informed on things. But I have to say that the process of how this bill has been put together has been top-notch, and I want to congratulate you and thank you for that. And, you know, there's a lot of good things in this bill. I want to also thank Representative Drazkowski and your leadership on this ag credit, the 50% ag credit, and we know that that's going to make a huge difference not only for our farmers around the state, but also for our rural schools, districts trying to pass referendums, and that's really, really important. The tax relief for senior citizens, you know, again, a good bipartisan issue that I think is going to help a lot of seniors around the state. The dependent care credit, the student loan, I think I heard you say this is the first in the nation, and so I think we can be proud of that as we try to get a handle on all those things. So a lot of really good things in this bill, and I want a tax bill this year. Mr. Chair, I know you want a tax bill this year. I think every member here wants a tax bill. The state of Minnesota wants and needs a tax bill. And so as we move forward on this, because we know you're 68, 34, and 1, that we know as we move forward, and I really offer any assistance I or our side of the aisle can provide in doing this, we're going to have to make sure we right-size this a little bit more as we go through the process. I talked in ways and means, you know, education has always been a huge priority, and we're going to have to right-size that a little bit. And as we think about that, as we move down the process, think about kind of the strategic targeted cuts that are going to do the most good. And there's a lot of them in this bill. But I do think there's a few more we can add. That working family credit, I just think, is a wonderful program that just does a lot of the things that we really kind of want to do. And local government aid, county program aid, I think has to be part of the mix in fixing the renter's credit as we move forward. But I think those things are all very doable, and I think we have, if we can right-size this and balance this more, we've got, I think, a good product here that the state of Minnesota would be proud of, and something that could get to your 68-34-1, Mr. Chair. And before I end, I want to thank the Department of Revenue, too, and I'm looking over at Mr. Cummings there, and I'll tell you what, and I think we'd all agree, I never seen him more prepared as he comes to the bills, and just his demeanor and the way he handles this very diverse committee, it's not easy. But, I mean, I think he almost knows as many mascots as you do, Mr. Chair, as he kind of talks about things. But to have Commissioner Bowerly and Mr. Cummings and others from the Revenue Department has been just really fun to have. So, Mr. Chair, thank you. I look forward to working with you and the committee as we move things forward to right size and balance this a little more and hopefully get this into law.
Well, thank you very much, Lee Marquardt. And I would say that we have made state history. This is the first time that a Department of Revenue tax person has been mentioned by name in the theme song of the tax bill, just so you know that. And I would certainly like to thank members, and I think Lee Marquardt said it best, this is a work in progress. We will work with the Senate, Republicans and Democrats. We'll work with the DFL in the House and the Republicans in the House, because it is my, and again, members, I thank you so much. Lee Markler, I thank you for being open to visiting on these very important issues. It is my goal that the come-together tax bill will be the best tax bill ever written, because it takes everyone's ideas into account. Not everybody's going to get everything they want. I understand that. But we have to do this together, because I'm going to put new numbers to this, 134-67-1. That's where we need to go. So that being said, I will renew my motion that I will move House File 4 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you very much, members. Our next meeting will be Monday. Please look at your emails. Thank you, Lee Markort. And members, good government all the time. We are